Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Milo's Pro Rewards members, go big during Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Buy more and save more with up to 20% off job site essentials like primed finger joint boards when you spend $3,000 or more. Plus, get up to 25% off PVC DWV pipes when you spend $250 or more. Shop Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 123. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. Joining me today, he is a writer, director, and producer of multiple features, including his latest documentary, The Alien Perspective. Welcome to the podcast, Dean Alioto. Dean, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Andrew.
Did I get your surname right? Because I was looking, going, Alioto, or is it Alioto? Or how would you pronounce it?
If you're in Asia, it's Alioto. If you're in Italy, it's Alioto.
Yeah.
Everyone else, it's pronounced the way that you said it. So
awesome. So I nailed it first time. I'm happy with that. Listen, Dean, lots to get to, including the Alien Perspective feature that's been out now for a couple of weeks and its upcoming part two. But before then, I want to chat about you, your background, and what's led you to have an interest in the UFO topic. How far back does that go?
It goes back to my parents' divorce. I was 7 years old. I ended up living with my father instead of my brothers for a few years. So from 7 to 9, being alone in you know, my apartment bedroom, I would stare out at the stars. This is in Sacramento, California. And just imagine that there was someone else on another planet that was going through similar circumstances. And it gave me great solace and made me feel like that we are, you know, basically not alone. And it was this kind of weird knowing that I had that that got me through everything that I kind of needed to as far as a child. But it also was fertilizer for my imagination. And so because I come at this space, no pun intended, from a filmmaker's POV, both of those were always meshing. Like, to me, my favorite type of story is doing stories that involve sci-fi. And so it's more than a third of my IP. And by sci-fi, it ends up being all about UFOs and aliens. And because I'm not an experiencer, I find that I need to recreate that as close as possible. And, you know, which is why I guess that first film resonated that I did with a lot of, you know, people, because it is told from that first person's point of view. So that was really the kind of gateway, was, you know, a divorce and needing to find that I wasn't alone.
So not an experiencer, but had you ever had any sightings growing up at all, even lights in the sky?
No, I mean, I think that I would see some things and then it would always be something prosaic. Mm. I did, however, recently, November 29th, to be exact, it was about 8:30 p.m. I looked out my deck in Los Angeles and I see all these drones. And I'm wondering, oh, they must be shooting, because I'm a filmmaker. I use drones all the time to get nice aerial shots, except there are seven of them. That doesn't make sense to me. And so I'm thinking maybe some of them are helicopters and the other ones are drones that are filming them. No, I wouldn't do that as a filmmaker. So I videotape it for 4.5 minutes and they're just circulating around, buzzing around. And then I get bored and I go inside and then it's still, I can see them out the window. We're watching TV and I can still see them there. And it must've been maybe an hour or more. And in my brain, I'm thinking, well, they probably changed the batteries and kicked up, you know, more of them, because it only lasts 30 minutes if you're lucky, of power of a drone in order to stay in the air. And then in December, the drone flap hits in Jersey. And I'm like, hold on, let me go back and look at that footage. And so it took on a whole different vibe after that. I mean, I think some of them might've been regular drones or helicopters, but just all conflated, all of them happening at once made no sense to me. And so my daughter went ahead and put them on TikTok and it blew up, and all these people were speculating on it and everything. So that's, I guess, would be as close as I've gotten, other than my mother, who in the 70s with my hippie stepfather saw a UFO coming up to the shore, like maybe 100 yards away, bright light, almost like an orb, but with a metal shape to it, saucer shape, and then saw it just take off like it smeared the sky, she said. So that's as close as I've gotten.
You used the qualifier hippie stepfather there. Are you suggesting there may have been psychedelics involved with such a close encounter, or am I off the mark there?
He was a hippie, like musician hippie, and he was a character. In fact, his reaction to this was to run out to the water, to the ocean, and scream, take me, which my mother did not appreciate.
Yeah, the 70s were definitely a vibe, I think, as the kids would say these days.
Yeah.
I think a lot of folks probably yearn for them, given in 2025, as we talk now, the world's a bit of a strange place to live in. But that's where folks listen to things like this, watch content like yours, for a bit of escapism, for information, for entertainment, whatever they choose to. So thanks for joining us, folks. It's safe to say, Dean, then, you growing up, you must have watched a lot of sci-fi. You must have watched a lot of and you lived through a golden age of cinema, of TV, coming up through the 80s and 90s, which have influenced you. What were your kind of go-to movies or documentaries even?
Well, there was a TV series, the original version of In Search Of. And so watch that. Leonard Nimoy was the host. The original pilot was actually done with Rod Serling, and then he passed away. But Leonard Nimoy was the host of that. And so that was my first exposure, more than anything, to that. And I used to always steal away to libraries and stuff and find books on UFOs and Bigfoot and, you know, Loch Ness, et cetera.
Yeah.
But when I saw the movie E.T., I mean, I remember seeing Close Encounters and being blown away and feeling like, wow, this is a spiritual thing. And it was the first time I associated anything with aliens and spirituality. But it really resonated. Like, I felt like I had been transcended. And not many UFO movies ever do that. They have trouble creating awe, let alone spiritual experience.
Yeah, that's fair. Yep.
Yeah. But I'm here talking to you because of one movie, and that movie was E.T., because I identified with it so strongly, because I was the jacked up, you know, crazy middle child who dreamed of aliens, like Elliot. My mother, when I moved back with my mother at age 9, you know, she was raising 3 kids on her own. And so that was certainly resonated with me. But instead of taking the broken family, quote unquote, and showing the trauma of it, it celebrated it. I mean, if you look at the movie again, if you haven't seen it in a while, it is an out and out comedy. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's sight gags and different, you know, various jokes throughout all of the situations in it. But more importantly, I was like, okay, it's all right to be a nerdy kid who dreams of aliens. In fact, it's celebrated. And the fact that it made, you know, more money than any film at the time in history, it was a big validation. And I literally came home from the film and I said to my mother, I'm a filmmaker. Like, that was it. And never looked back. So that was my North Star.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think the generational movies like that maybe come along, where most alien movies are either big abductions, scary aliens, fight scenes, blockbusters. I love the original Independence Day. I won't talk about the second one, which...
No, we won't.
if I ever won the equivalent of the US Powerball, like a $500 million, right, kind of sum of money, I'd love to take like $300 million and make the third Independence Day they were going to, because part two was meant to follow on to part three, just for the sheer absurdity of seeing where it goes, because it certainly seemed to come away from, can I say, realism of the first movie?
Yeah.
The way the kind of second movie went. But E.T., like you say, it's a friendship movie with the alien story in the background, and one of the friends happens to be an alien. And then you get those kind of films, and they're harder and harder to do. And Pixar's next feature, is it Elio, it's called? E-L-I-O, is due out this summer. And that about...
Who's the filmmaker? Say again?
Pixar.
Oh, Pixar. So
it's a new Disney Pixar movie, yep.
You got a scoop on me on that. I know about Spielberg's new one. My girlfriend works at Universal.
Yes.
So I keep pumping her and going, what is it? What's the title? What's the script? And she's like, sorry, we don't even know. And so, but it's going to be, I mean, it's the first time that it's ever been announced that Spielberg's doing an event movie.
Mm.
And to put UFO in front of it is just like, you know, Nirvana, man. It's like freebasing, you know, our favorite subject. But no, Pixar, that's cool. That's very cool.
And that's a whole different audience and generation, because you're going to get the parents going, but you're going to get the kids. And again, very quickly, folks, the story is a little kid gets accidentally abducted on a spaceship, and the aliens, all the friendly looking aliens ask him, you know, who are you? And they're like, oh, it's a boy or a girl, can't remember, says, I'm like from Earth. And they're like, oh, well, this is Earth's ambassador. Come and join us.
Yes, I think I saw the trailer for this.
Yeah.
And they think he's a leader. And yeah, it's cute.
And you wonder, how will that influence future generations? You know, you were there once watching E.T. and bang, that was a life-changing moment for you. And then you've got Spielberg's movie down the line. What do you feel these kind of movies can do in terms of influencing the public then? And then we'll get to Alien perspective in just a moment.
Sure, absolutely. So my feeling on those is funny. When E.T. came out, I thought, well, now's the time for full disclosure and the aliens to show up and, you know, not sing Kumbaya, but to show up and maybe, you know, share some alien casserole recipes. Who knows? But I feel like, you know, movies always lead us. Movie and art. You know, you look at the Civil War. That was kicked off. One of the firecrackers that were set off that got that going was Uncle Tom's Cabin, which was a book written by someone who was telling what it was like for slaves. And a lot of women actually read this book, tied in with the, you know, that had political husbands, and helped to get this grassroots thing going, because it was just this thing that was ignored. But it came from a book, and other things have happened. I mean, a lot of the great discoveries we're seeing now in science came from Star Trek. People watching Star Trek, then Star Wars. And so the greatest sci-fi writers, and to me, that's the most imaginative genre. I mean, there's fantasy. Yes, that's great. But sci-fi, that to me, like Arthur C. Clarke and some of these, you know, amazing, you know, Isaac Asimov, these were all precursors to what was to come. So if you want to know what is coming down the pike, and I'm not talking about jetpacks, you can see it there. You can see it being prophesized. Mm. And so with films, and especially with aliens and stuff like Arrival and some of these other films, and I loved Independence Day. I mean, epic. Yes, we won't talk about two, but I keep wondering is, you know, everyone talks about, you know, that these filmmakers are all, maybe they're working with a government and they're giving us some insights and stuff, or maybe they had to editorialize it because the government, that doesn't happen. I'm here to say, no one tells Spielberg what to put in a movie, what not to. I know that Bryce Zabel had a weird experience when he was working on the series.
Dark Skies.
Yeah. Dark Skies. But no, you're free to do whatever. I mean, look at some of the political films that are made, from Hurt Locker to I think it was Lion for Lambs. No one steps in and you know, tries to get these guys to stop. So I really feel like when people are doing their research, their homework well, because there are filmmakers that are experiencers who are starting to make movies in this space. And so I think that's when whatever message is that we're conveying, because like I got, you know, for 7 years, I've been stuck in the filmmaking documentary, UFO documentary rabbit hole. And it's serious. It grabs you. I mean, I didn't know what hit me. I'm just still now kind of sorting it out as I'm finishing up, and some insights that I hadn't come across, you know, people talking about came my way. And so I was grateful for those because of this, but it's the most powerful, you know, subject to be, you know, working on because of so many reasons. Yeah.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Well, you've set me up with the segue there. So 7 years in the making, the alien perspective. It wasn't a documentary that's come to you in the last year. Bang, it's been rolled out. Here we go. What's the story behind that? Because there, the 7 years to make it, what was the build-up process even before then?
Sure. So what happened was I had made this film, The McPherson Tape, which was is considered the first found footage film. It was made I had dropped out of my second film school. Had to make my first film by 25 because Spielberg and all my idols, Scorsese, had done that. And I didn't have a pot to piss in. And so on the limited budget, there wasn't DSLR cameras and stuff. Your iPhone doesn't look as good as it did. There was no iPhone. There was no phone, period. Mobile phone, really, to speak of. And so anyway, I made this thing, and after reading the book Communion, and I wanted to have it feel like it was as much from the viewer's point of view. So you literally got sucked into it. And so that's where I came up with the idea that we'll shoot it all through a home video camera by a 6-year-old who's videotaping his niece's 5-year-old birthday party when the shit hits the fan and they see a ship and aliens, and one by one they get abducted. And it was all closely researched and closely related to the experiencers, what they have had reported. So that was kind of this thing that I made and thought that was it and moved on. And then it became this cult classic. Someone had edited off the credits and ended up at the International UFO Congress Convention, where it was believed to be real. A lieutenant colonel, 40 years Air Force, since said this is authentic. And then I went on national TV. There was Unsolved Mysteries, a hard copy, and a show called Encounters for Fox. And they all said, you know, we want to, you know, expose this. And I said, hell yeah. So I think I'm the only filmmaker who debunked his own film. Anyway, so for the 25th anniversary, I'm invited to go out to that same UFO convention, the International UFO Congress Convention. And I go out there and I speak to like 1,000 people. And I found that they had great levity, because I don't take myself serious, as you can tell, at all. I take my work very serious, but not me. And so I kind of feel like the Forrest Gump that's been dragged along here. So I showed it, and then I started meeting people that were extremely accomplished professors from Harvard, Carnegie Mellon, Montana Tech. And I saw that there was a documentary here. And because I'd done documentaries for TV, I thought, you know, if I could do this in a way that's a premium doc, have it be a higher level than I've seen before, I might be interested in in delving into this as not a usual scripted narrative feature fiction film, but and a documentary on it. And so I set out to do a 9-month, 15 interview documentary, and that would be it. And that was the last that we heard of Dean, because he disappeared, because you would interview someone, like we started at NASA. And then NASA, I asked them a question, says, what happens? I said, what happens when you do find a planet that has life on it, where you can see a light grid and everything, a civilization? What do you do then? And she literally got the giggles, and we have it all on camera. She's like, we don't have a plan for that. And I'm like, wait, what? You've got the James Webb telescope and all this stuff. You're the deputy in charge of a program. And she's like, yeah. And she's like, you know, I think you need to go here, because they do have a protocol. So one person leads to another, and then pretty soon I'm, you know, looking back, and I've got 66 interviews, 4 countries, and that one documentary becomes 4 documentaries. And so the first one, as you mentioned, The Alien Perspective, is dropped and comes out. And I guess the turnkey for me to make these docs, because I'm not interested in doing something that's been done before. Mm. It's not fun. It's not exciting. And so when I realized that every single other documentary had been done from the human's perspective, which is mostly what we have to go off of, I saw that if I did the inverse of that and looked at it from the alien's perspective as a hypothetical, that I could pull in, you know, great minds like Michio Kaku, you know, terrific people, Michael Masters and people at Harvard. And I knew that I could pull that in and we could munch on that. And what came out of that was, I thought, exceptional enough that I wanted to do a part one and part two. And so that's kind of, you know, what happened there, and how it just continued to grow and grow and split off into 4 docs, like I said. And so we've got part one and part two, and then there's 2 more docs that are completely separate from those, because there's so many different facets of this. But anyway, yeah. Let's
dive into the first aspect of that. And I've got a note here to ask you about a lot of documentaries. I think if you gave 100 folks in the UFO community, or even like budding documentary makers, a small budget and said, go off and make a UFO documentary, 95 of them would look very similar. They'd follow the same story, the same tone, the same vibe. I think they would all go after the same people to speak to. And I feel you've done a good job, even in the trailer, to set the expectation that this might be a little bit different. We're trying to do something different. Do you feel documentary makers now are aware of the saturation in the market with UFO documentaries? There are so many good ones, though, but even the greatest documentary coming out now from Spielberg, telling us all about the Tic Tac and Travis Walton, you have seen it. And yes, there is an audience, but let's for a minute talk about, you know, the UFO community, who is still an audience, and I think almost sometimes gets overlooked, because one, you can say this isn't for them, but you know what is for them then? And that is a sizable audience to overlook, I think. So do you feel there's an awareness of that saturation in the market?
Oh my God, dude, it was a tightrope for me as a filmmaker. I'm walking a tightrope, because on one side, I've got the UFO community, which I'm a part of. And it's like, show me something I haven't seen before. Otherwise, why am I going to pluck down money? So I had to have at least, you know, 2 mic drops in every show that I'm doing, at least 2. And because, you know, I that is a significant audience, as you said. In fact, it's you know, the biggest audience out there of genre. I mean, there's no romantic comedy convention or film festival, but there is with sci-fi aliens, UFOs. So, but on the other hand, I'm here to feed the bi UFO curious who are interested in the subject, but don't know how to get into it. And you have to kind of guide them into it. That's a bigger share, just by numbers. And so that's why we start at NASA. And even though we're learning things at NASA that haven't been asked before, we still start there, because it's kind of known. It's like, oh yeah, NASA. Okay. And gives it a certain, you know, legitimacy, if you will. And then from there, we start to go deeper into other theories. And, you know, one of the big theories that we get into is that we may be living in a simulated reality. Mm. And so I went to interview the Oxford professor, Dr. Nick Bostrom, who created the simulated reality hypothesis. And I ask him, and he literally says, no. He says, I'm not saying figuratively that this civilization or the superintelligence that created mankind in the simulation are aliens. I'm saying they would be aliens, absolutely, if this is happening. And so we break that down. And so it just continues going. And so by the end of the first episode, we've kind of gotten everyone else up to speed and also had a bunch of goodies for us, UFOites. And then part two really brings it home. And there's a reason why there's part one and part two, because part two has a completely different vibe. And so it's like I said, it's a tightrope. You had to serve both masters.
So you mentioned some of the cast in from part one. Michio Kaku is one who is very well known in UFO circles, but he isn't necessarily someone who does the podcasting circuit, much to my own chagrin, right? I would love to speak to Michio Kaku, but he pops up on enough features that he keeps his face out there. Very intelligent guy, incredible to listen to. So such a unique character, not just in ufology, but I think in any documentary, when you see a Michio Kaku pop up, you sit up and take notice. Was it really important to get someone like him involved?
Yeah. He was a big get. It took a while to get him. In fact, there were a lot of interviews, you know, the 66 interviews, there were some that, like, as an example, well, I'll tell you that the top three hardest gets was Michio Kaku, Leslie Kane, and Dinah Pisalka, Professor Dinah Walsh Pisalka, very tough. And you kind of have to come at different angles and stuff. And I have everyone, you know, a buddy of mine is James Fox. And so he's reaching out to Leslie for me and saying, no, Dean's a straight shooter. You should, you know, do his thing. And then Leslie helps me get Dinah Pisalka. And so to get someone like Michio Kaku to talk about this was kind of like, now we're grounded. Now we can call this a UFO science documentary, if you will. But he says some things that he had never admitted before and never endorsed before. But then he said, you know, he was talking about why aliens would visit us. And he gives his own theory. And I've heard this theory before. But in part two, you see Dave Foley, actor, UFO researcher, completely crush that one theory that Michio puts forth. I mean, literally demolishes it. So there is some play back and forth where you do have people that are talking and everything about things that we may not agree with, but you know, I don't want to have a documentary just be all yes, man, this is it.
Yeah, no, I like that as well. Even on the podcast, I like when you can put something to a guest, or it can be a one-on-one discussion or multiple person discussion, and folks should be able to disagree, because ultimately this whole topic is largely theory still. And the most ardent UFO researchers and experts, who there are so many people listening to this who know far more than I do, most people probably do, but we don't know yet who is more correct than everyone else. We can still all be wrong. So as a director, what's it like for you trying to work out how far do you go in a documentary or even a part one?
So as a filmmaker, when it comes down to how far we want to go in the rabbit hole, I will go as far as I can go if I can support what that theory is in a credible way. I'm not going to, you know, get into other aspects of the phenomenon. Like I'm not going to talk about Bigfoot or some of the other aspects, you know, even Bermuda Triangle, because it doesn't really relate to what I'm trying to do. And I've got a limited amount of time to do it. And there's more than enough fantastical elements in this. But the thing also is that when you get into this, you learn, like you were saying, about how there's other people who know so much more than us that are really in it. Well, for me, over the 7 years, what I gleaned from this was I was able to take off the table a lot of the things that I thought I knew, which was equally important, things that I thought, oh, this is how this is and everything, I realized that they weren't. So it was equal amounts of that and equal amounts of learning new stuff. But it's kind of like, you know, the Beatles. When you first start listening to them, you're going, oh my God, this is pretty cool and everything, especially when your parents are playing them. And then you go, well, I like Paul. Paul's my favorite. Then you go to John and then George, and maybe you settle on Ringo. And if each of these, the Beatles, represent different theories and stuff, you kind of ping pong around them. And I found myself going into, yes, simulated reality. Oh my God, that's terrifying, but that makes sense. And then, you know, Dr. Mike Masters, you know, looking at his extraterrestrial theory that they're us from the future. And so the answers I look for are ones that resonate mostly are the ones that I look and I go, let's project ourselves out. What are we going to do when we have interstellar travel capability? And also, if we could time travel, what would we do? And how would we do that? Would there be certain safeguards and stuff? Would there be the prime directive? Certainly. And so that was also helpful in kind of informing this, at least to jumpstart it. But a lot of these things, I'd be talking to people, and then we would come up with something completely different that they're not even pushing, you know, as their theorem. And that was really exciting when you talk to some of these great minds and stuff. And that led to some of the bigger, more tantalizing discoveries in the documentary.
What you, for you personally, was a big change from the beginning of those 7 years to the end that you thought, if you'd asked me then, this is what I thought, but now that's totally gone and this is where I am?
Yeah, I would say at the beginning I was open-minded, and at the end of it, I didn't believe any of it. No, just kidding. At the end of it, it was more getting substantial evidence to support certain things. As an example, talking to Masters, I brought up, and we didn't end up putting this in the documentary, but we'll probably do a special features thing. But I brought up, I said to Masters, I said, you know, everyone talks about gray alien hybrids. No one talks about reptilian hybrids or praying mantis hybrids. And I said, so that kind of supports your idea that they're from the future, because we can't mate with chimpanzees, which are share 99. You know, whatever percent of their DNA and genes like us. So the idea that these beings would be coming from a completely different planet altogether, and we would be able to, you know, again, if we're looking at the hybrid theory, dynamic, you know, experience that happens. If we're looking at that, then we have to really consider that maybe they are us from the future. I mean, the fact that they're bipedal, they look very much like us. I think that there's good evidence there. And so we get into that and we start talking about that and how that would relate and what that would look like and how we project ourselves out. And so that was one of them. And so, boy, in other ways, I learned that, you know, the experiencers a lot of them, this isn't something that has happened a one-off. You know, it happens in childhood, which we've all heard and read and everything. But in my other documentary that I have coming out called The Experiencers, that'll be later this year.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I have, don't want to give it away, but I've got a very, very well-known, one of the most well-known experiencers in the world. And it turns out that they had been had experiences as a child, which will be revealed for the first time. And so, sorry, my brain is like, there's so many of them things that came up where I learned that I didn't, know before. I remember looking at this and thinking, for some reason, I thought, and I talked to Lou Elizondo about this, we had a discussion about how these crafts are probably organic and they're probably not controlled by a joystick. They're probably controlled by the mind, mentally, mind over matter. That to me makes sense when you start looking at, like solid state. We got to a point where the technology was so great and had all these, like a watch, had all these great, pieces to it. But you look at solid state where it's all one, simple mechanism that all works together in concert. That to me, I keep thinking, projecting out that technology for like a craft, it would probably be something like that. It would probably be much more organic. So that's just a few of the things that that came out that I was kind of surprised by.
You had me frantically moving notes about there in the background as you were talking, going, oh, he's mentioned that, take that out. Oh, wait, right, bring that forward. And you mentioned a key word there a few times, evidence. And early on in the series, you see Dr. Kevin Knuth. Kevin's been a guest on the podcast, holding a piece of alleged debris. And I want to talk about this, okay? Because this is going to raise eyebrows. And I'll ask you really straight, Dean. This isn't just something there as to bait a viewer in. Because I've often said, no documentary, with all due respect, no documentary or book or podcast will ever bring forward disclosure. If anyone ever claimed that this documentary or this podcast is going to reveal the truth, that's not going to happen, because something that big and huge and explosive would be taken to, let me ask you, if you got what you truly believed was a footage, smoking gun evidence, irrefutable, oh my God, this is the video the world has been waiting for, what do you do with that piece of evidence?
I think I sell it on eBay for as much as possible. I think what I would probably do, here's the thing, boy, that's a whole other discussion with regards to what disclosure is, right? Because having artifacts from a higher intelligence, I think, is as evidence is a signpost, really, and we are having the material that I will vaguely state. It's being checked out by one of the top pioneers in extraterrestrial material, and what I mean by that is comets and. Yep. Asteroids. And he's out of Caltech. He's a rock star. I mean, he's not someone who kind of dabbles in this. He's someone, this is what he does for a living. Yeah. And so he felt confident because it had been already analyzed two other times beforehand with interesting results. But this guy, we just all agreed, and Kevin agreed, whatever he comes up with, that's going to be the final. So with regards to evidence impacting society, well, you kind of have to ask yourself, what is that? Smoking gun is one thing. We have the congressional hearings, right? It's going on and on. Last one was in, I believe, October or November 17th, like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until they drop out a UFO tailpipe on the congressional hearing desk in front of them, we don't really have that. If we have a craft, are we really going to flaunt it and we're going to show it to the public? And are we going to auction off free UFO rides? I don't think so. I think we're going to hold on to that. So, I think what we're going to get is maybe better footage. which they have, absolutely. I would, you know, almost stake my life on that. But what are we leading to? Because we already know that this is real. The experiencers have had disclosure for decades, probably centuries. So what are we hoping to get ultimately? Because right now, the Navy, the government, they've all admitted we have it. So that is a great meal in of itself. And people kind of want to skip to the second, third course, maybe dessert. And so I kind of feel like ultimately who's controlling this? Yes, governments are, but it's also being controlled by those visiting us. And so what we're getting right now is we're getting teasers, maybe a little bit of the first trailer to an incredible movie that we all want to skip ahead to the climax of. And I'm here to tell you, it's like I'm going to geek out right here and tell you, I've got this Jaws Lego set, right? And so do I want to have technology that puts it all together for me and I have it, you know, when it's like alien technology? Or do I want to put the thing together myself? And do I want to grow and evolve and learn? I was on Chris Leto's show, and I said to him, I posed the same question to him. I said, hey, would you rather have a helmet that you put on that someone had recorded their experiences flying a jet plane, and have you put that on, and all of a sudden now you know how to fly a jet, and that's how you became a jet fighter in the military? Would you rather have that, or would you rather learn and have that, you know, that gainful experience of what it was like to be able to know, oh, well, if this situation happens, this is what I do, and just the sense of accomplishment? Well, I feel like we still have a lot to learn. I mean, if you look at like a bridge with the aliens being on the other side of the bridge, well, if two tribes, if you will, meet, it's got to be in the middle. And we haven't even, evolution-wise, we're not even a type one species. We haven't even stepped on the bridge with one foot. And so we've got a lot of work to do to get to that place. And so I feel like, you know, when we do talk about disclosure, I'm all for it as much as we can get. I want to see the end of the movie too, guys. But I feel like if I'm just looking at the evidence at hand, it is definitely being controlled more by them, the beings, than our government.
Yeah, I like using movie analogies and whatnot. And Infinity War is probably one of the best movies made, I think, especially from a Marvel point of view. But would you have enjoyed it as much or got the same payoff without seeing all the movies that came before it building to it? And like you say, if indeed we're getting this build, which some people may find chronically slow, but I think I can appreciate now, especially doing this, the last 5 years of UFO news and progress, some good, some bad, you know, it's been a roller coaster. But I think we're further forward than we were 5 years ago. The folks who have followed this topic in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and I even think being a kid and remembering going into like video shops, VHS for some of the kids out there, and seeing the same VHS, the same videos, the same documentaries. You go into a shop and you see magazines with the same kind of stories regurgitated. The sheer volume of news we have now is almost overwhelming for people.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of folks messaging me to say that. They struggle to find where to start, where to go, how to keep up. And sometimes it's very difficult to do that. And maybe when we take a step back in years to come, do you feel, Dean, we're going to be looking at this time as being a real ramp up that, you know, we've actually maybe had the trailer and we're getting towards the main feature now? Where do you think we sit in that kind of pre-launch timeline?
Well, boy, my background before doing these documentaries was, I was into stuff like reincarnation, spirituality, aspects of Buddhism, believing that, you know, we're all part of Source. You know, we're like tentacles of whatever created everything. That to me is Source, right? And so whoever created us created the beings as well. And I'm comfortable with that. That seems to symmetry-wise make sense. And so when I look at this and I look at where we were, say, 100 years ago from 1969 going back to 1869. I mean, think about 1869. Civil War was just over. We're still got torches and carriages and stuff. And then 100 years later, we're on the moon. So we are making evolution, but that wasn't that long ago that we were living like that. Humans on the scale of things, we're new. I mean, there are other planets and stuff that have been around for billions of years. So I feel like when I look at disclosure, what is that? It's okay. Let's walk down that rabbit hole. When I was at Shag Harbor, I spoke to disclosure and I said, let's play this out. What the hell does this look like? And so here's what it looks like for everyone. Okay. It looks like a UFO flying over the White House and landing on the White House lawn. Okay. That's kind of problematic because it'll get shot at before it even gets near the White House. But let's say that they communicate or they block all of our weapons and everything and they land. So the craft lands. Everyone comes out. We're videotaping it. We're filming it with iPhones and with news cameras. And then a gray alien, let's say, comes out. Okay. The alien comes out and whoever is the spokesperson comes out to communicate with them. Well, they don't communicate verbally, do they? As far as the experiencers' experiences. No one has ever said, oh yeah, I saw them come out of the UFO whistling and they were, you know, mimicking Matthew McConaughey. So it's all telepathically.
Yeah.
So, okay. So they would telepathically communicate. Why does that telepathy go? Like, can they look at a camera and then everyone who's looking at the camera, will it come? Supposedly that hasn't happened as an example. You've got to be in somewhat close proximity. So now you got to rely on the spokesperson to relay everything perfectly, right? To us. Now, who's the spokesperson? And now could they maybe be manipulating it? So then maybe the alien has to go on a whistle stop tour, you know, where they're going from town to town and everyone's having their own personal experiences. Someone at some point is going to say, like Lou Elizondo will tell you, when he would do these briefings with generals, a chunk of them would say, thank you so much, you're doing God's work. And then you would have another chunk of them say, you know, they're demons, right?
Mm.
So we do that. We love putting things on pedestals and knocking that shit down. And so what are we going to get from that ultimately? You know, look at this thing. This is, we're not alone. Awesome. I think we already believe that, but let's take it, you know, the next step further. So what happens when you go, oh, well, we want the alien technology. I'm like, hell yeah. Anti-gravity, sign me up. Our planes will be the weight of a car because they don't have to have such a robust infrastructure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that technology of anti-gravity, that can be used to take certain people or certain nations and levitate them off the planet.
Yep.
So who are we going to give this to? And we're going to say only America is going to have it? So there's just certain things that it comes down to. And one of the biggest reasons, you know, I was talking to Yvonne Smith and saying, why am I doing these documentaries? I don't understand this because I've never spent this much time on any of the films that I've done. And I said, I'm not an experiencer, so I don't get it. And she chuckled and said, well, they don't have to come to your door to get you to kind of be a part of their messaging. And what is their message? Their messages are two things. Your technology isn't helping you and you're ruining the planet. And so for me, ruining the planet, everyone goes, well, they could come and they could help us and they could clean up our environment and everything. I'm like, hold on, time out. You again want to get halfway on the bridge. How are you doing that if you're having a parent come in and clean your bedroom that has to say to you, don't have me come back here and do it again. You guys have to do it, clean up your own room and leave. So I feel like we've got some earning to do. We have some evolution to do to get to that. And we can. That's the great news, is that we absolutely can. We just have to all get on the same page and prioritize where we're at and what's important. And I think ultimately, when we start looking at the planet as being a part of us, truly a part of us, which it is, you know, and we can show that respect for the planet. I think until we get to that and a few other signposts to prove, you know, sorry, I'm going off on a tangent here, but
no, it's okay.
Until we get to that place, you know, we still have to earn, our seat at the table with regards to full disclosure and talking to them. So I'm not sure how we overcome that for another species, you know, that. You know, that to me is kind of paramount to communion, to, you know, close encounters of the fourth kind, if you will, or fifth kind.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Happening.
So here's a question then. Quite often people will talk very spiritually about this topic, or very hopeful that another species is going to come and save us from ourselves. Is there an argument that any intelligent species who comes right now to give us a seat at whatever table it could be, you could almost question the decision behind that as to why? I would raise an eyebrow, because right now, and I've had discussions again with some folks offline, and it's kind of difficult ones to have, because I think they're quite broad and moralistic and ethical, and I'm not eloquent enough to have these, and philosophers and people should have them. But I look at, pick a country and a third world nation, and there are babies being slaughtered in horrific ways, and as a species we are doing really awful things to each other in a lot of different places. And I then hear people say, well, the Palladian beings are going to come and there's going to be a new age of love and light. And I'm like, yeah, are Ugandan warlords who are slaughtering babies with machetes ready for an era of love and light? And I I'm probably really simplifying it down. But I would then judge a species coming to us and going, yeah, you're all ready now. Ready for what? Have you seen the state of us as a species? And you're quite right to say we're relatively new still, but we are not on the right track as a species. Maybe individually and in kind of groups and compartmentalization, we do some wonderful things, but we still do some awful, terrible things as a species. So is it fair to question any species who visits us and would want to interact in a meaningful way?
Okay. Well, do you know why we're doing stuff like slaughtering babies and doing all this heinous stuff beyond imagination? Do you know why we do that?
Are you going to say religion?
No. Because we are animals. Humans are animals. And we keep forgetting that. We still have centuries, maybe millions of years, definitely millions of years, where we had to have instincts in order to stay alive, where we became very territorial and we would look at someone who's different. I mean, look at the Neanderthals. They didn't last. And a lot of the experts will say it's because they were different. And at some point it was just too much to take, even though us mixing with them, I've got some, apparently according to my DNA, tests on Ancestry, I have Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal DNA in me, but that helped with the gene pool. So getting back to the point, we are animalistic. And so we have to continue to evolve to get to the point where we treat each other as we're one, a hive mentality. You don't see these grays. No one ever talks about them getting pissed off at each other, you know, while they're doing their procedures and stuff and going, well, I wouldn't do it that way. You know, I would take the probe and I would do it more like this. You know, none of that stuff really happens. They kind of move as one. They have a plan, and for whatever it is, I suspect it's for both of us, a mutual thing. I really feel that until we get to that point evolution-wise where we can get there, we're not going to, you know, be granted even the technology, even creating it. Because right now, with nuclear weapons and stuff and the hydrogen bomb and everything and the stuff that we're coming up with that we don't even know about, it's like a little kitten that's running down a hallway whose hind legs run up a little bit ahead of it because it doesn't have the coordination right. And so, you know, we're sitting here with a box of matches and playing with it, but there's no safeguards really yet. And the safeguards have to come from us inherently in the type of being that we are. And so I feel like we have to still earn that. And that's not fun because there's a ton of people on this planet, billions, who are evolved and are having to wait for other people to catch up. So I don't know how to do that. I really want to expedite that, especially having children. You want it to be better and better. And experts will say, historians will say, well, this is pretty good comparatively, you know, look at the Middle Ages and shit like that, right? But yeah, and so I kind of feel like we need a consciousness shift. And I don't know how that happens. And then I don't know, once we get there, how do we keep it there? Because we have had moments, you know, where we've all been aligned and went, yes, this is how things should be and how we should treat each other. And then people get bored, you know, but the animal instinct is always there. So until we can process that therapeutically or gene-wise, we can't pinpoint a date. I mean, we will eventually get there because I suspect that the grays and other beings had to get there in order to survive.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. Yeah, and perhaps I'd love to hear from listeners their thoughts on it. So if people comment below to sound like a cliched YouTuber or email in, that would be great to hear people's thoughts on that kind of argument. I'm sure some folks would even say, Dean, that just that moment itself would be shifting enough for the consciousness of the planet, and you know that could change things. But yeah, back to the alien perspective and part one more thing I want to touch on. The Tic Tac event is covered, and a lot of folks might look at a UFO documentary listening to this and go, I don't really need to see the Tic Tac event covered again. However, what I'll give you here, Dean, the animation is fantastic, and I know I've heard you talk about this previously. Tell us the story behind that, because genuinely, I do feel it adds another dimension, pardon the pun, to the Tic Tac story, because you've not quite seen it delivered in this medium before, which I really enjoyed. So can you talk about who done the animation and what the thinking was there?
Sure. So I'm a little dyslexic, which makes sense that I'm right side of the brain, and I'm into the visuals, and as a filmmaker, that plays into that nicely. So when I look at the Tic Tac footage, I'm going to date myself. I think of the game, the Atari game Pong, where you have that little hash mark moving back and forth and everything. And then it, you know, jumps out of frame. And so I really have to go off the testimony of Commander Fravor and some of the other people involved in it. And that's great, but I don't see it. I can't see it. So I decided, rather than try to, you know, reenact it, and the cost of getting jets out there and doing the maneuvers and stuff would be prohibitive and everything else, I thought, well, what if I were to get an animator and come in and do that and have them be able to put a camera where you couldn't do that in real life? And so I targeted this guy who had done the animation, was the animation director for this Oscar-winning film called Searching for Sugarman. His name is Arvid Steen out of Sweden. And I reached out to him and I said, hey, do you have a protege or someone that you're working with to do this? Because I didn't know if he would be interested in this at all. And he said, well, let's jump on a call for 5-10 minutes. And I go, sure. 45 minutes later in the call, he goes, all right, I am doing this. This is just wild. I've never been a part of anything like this. I'm your guy. And I was just knocked over. And so Arvid came on board, and working with the description of Commander Fravor and some others and everything and images that we had seen, I went ahead and it took a long time to get it just right, because I'm a perfectionist. We were able to actually take people through what it was like for Commander Fravor inside his jet, and also from the alien craft's point of view. And so we see all of this for the first time ever. And so that to me was really kind of something that I wanted to next level this, or I wanted people to say, okay, here's what this felt like, not what we hear it like, here's what it felt like. And so I'm glad that you dig it. We've been getting a lot of great feedback from the animation. Also, we do the Rendlesham Forest one, which you know, usually because I've done crime shows for 20 years, right? And you always try to find an actor that look like what that person, real person, looked like 20 years ago or 25 years ago. Well, this was many years ago. And maybe the actor can act, who knows, but to have an animator draw him exactly like it was, the uniform he was wearing, what the forest looked like, what the craft looked like, it was next level. And so for me, that was something that had to be done, you know, not just for everyone, but especially for us, you know, ufologists who really wanted to drill down on those details and see it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. And let me ask, what have the reactions then been like? Because I think it's been out almost 2 months now on streaming services to part one.
Yeah, so part one has been fantastic. The reviews have been great, from our rating on IMDb to Dread Central, which is a genre review like Rotten Tomatoes. We got an article on that. All of it's been fantastic. The biggest complaint that we've got, to be honest, is everyone wants to see part two. And they're like, you bastard, this is a pretty brutal cliffhanger. How can you leave us hanging? The actor Thomas Jane, ufologist as well, Thomas Jane came to the screen that we had in LA, and he was like, God damn it, Dean, can you give us a little? I go, no, it's a whole different thing. So you'll see it. And I can make an announcement here, which is part two is going to come out June 1st, but we're going to have our world premiere at Contact in the Desert, May 31st. And so we'll have a panel there and everything, and we'll probably show part one and part two back to back. But we've done really well with it. It's on Apple TV and Amazon. I kind of prefer Apple TV because I think the player is a little bit better, cleaner. On it, but either is fine. But it's available for rent or purchase.
So right now, if people sit down, they can watch part one. What do you want them to come away thinking afterwards? If there's one thing, you know, that those end credits start to roll. And of course, as a director, you want everyone to sit and watch those end credits. No one switches off as soon as that title screen comes up. What do you want folks to sit and think?
I want to have, okay, well, I'll say you're bi UFO curious. I want them to see all the work that has been done, all the mind, mental energy that's gone into deciphering what is going on. I want them to appreciate that. I want them to have their curiosity cut wide open, and so that they'll be open to not just my documentaries, but other documentaries on this as well. And so with us people in the UFO community, I'm really proud of the fact that we have things that people haven't seen before, or in a way that people haven't seen before. And so I think ultimately that the takeaway is for people to get confirmation that yes, this is happening. Let's just put away all doubt. This is pretty much confirmation that, and to have it presented in a way that hasn't been done, a quality level. This is a premium documentary. And so, I would say that the takeaway from this is feeling like there is some solid confirmation in areas that we haven't even explored before.
And do you want to mention the other features you're working on as well? Because there's more, isn't there? One of them featuring John Mack?
Yeah. So, again, it was one movie, then it became a four-part series that we almost sold to Netflix, walked away from that because we wanted to discover where this was going and how these would all lay out. And how they laid out was it became part one, part two, and then I had two other a grouping of interviews and some experiences that we caught on camera that were so specific. One specifically was the experiencers, and so that is a doc that'll be coming out, and that is a feature doc that has people like Travis Walton and Terry Lovelace and the Barney and Betty Hill story. But we also have two people, relatives, who discover real time that they are experiencers. That was captured on camera. I can tease that. It's amazing. So that one, it will be coming out. And again, these all have animation. And so we see what it was like, you know, for Travis Walton, we see what it was like with someone that looks like Travis Walton. But we also have other people that, again, that people haven't seen before. And then one that I'm very, very excited about is a documentary about John Mack. There hasn't been one before. He's been mentioned in many docs, you know, from the phenomenon to the aerial phenomenon. But we get into that, and we have interesting things that have been uncovered that no one's known before about him. Just an amazing mind. For me, that is, you know, he's the Roy Neary, if you will, of the ufology. He's someone that walks into this with a little bit of course, J. Allen Hynek, where they walk into it a full skeptic. And then it just changes and becomes something completely tangible, which blows him away, and what that journey was like, and how he, you know, was crucified literally, you know, professionally wise by this. And so we cover all of that, and we have new interviews and stuff. And again, the pressure's on me to present things that we haven't seen before in a way that pushes the UFO, you know, football down the field further. And so anyway, I'm really excited about those. But, you know, after 7 years, all of these will be coming out. I think the last one may be released early next year, but we're doing a big dump of these.
Yeah. Well, speaking of documentaries, I need to get your thoughts before you go on Age of Disclosure, which is a big documentary folks are talking about right now from Dan Farah. This has got 34 individuals, I think, was the last count I saw, including Lou Elizondo, a lot of the big names, big congressmen and women who are involved in the UFO topic coming forward. And a lot of folks saying this is going to move the needle. It debuts at South by Southwest, I think, in a couple of days' time from this. What's your expectations on this documentary of this size with this kind of those kind of heavyweight names behind it and what it could actually achieve?
Okay, let me try to unpack that. First of all, it is a great-looking documentary. I feel like I'm watching a Netflix show. It's shot, you know, as it should be, high end quality. So I'm excited about that. I've seen all these people talk before. And so I'm assuming that Dan has gone ahead and he's gleaned new things from them. It's not coming across, 100% in the trailer, which you would want to hold back anyway. So I don't know enough, to be honest, about that. I think, again, having the subject, the topic out there and handled in a quality way is key to getting people to pay attention. I will say that having this documentary at South by Southwest is a pretty epic achievement.
Yeah,
because that's never happened before. I don't know if he's going to get it in theaters or if he's doing it. I think he'll be streaming somewhere. He's going to sell it before if he hasn't already. So, yeah.
I think Jay Stratton's the big one a lot of folks are looking at, and he has comments in the trailer of, I have seen alien bodies and alien craft. I think that could go one of two ways, depending on, I've said before on the podcast, Dean, any qualifiers before it. If the worst case scenario happens where actually what he said is, we need people to come forward who can tell us, I have seen alien bodies and I have seen this. And you're a documentary maker. People use creative license. They take that quote and they move that little bit out to make it more sensational. We're hoping, though, that Jay Stratton himself is coming out and saying, no, I have seen this, and can even perhaps go a little bit further. But yeah, I think the South by Southwest seems to be a really big achievement. I doubt it's going to go theatrical. Maybe a limited theatrical release in certain places. I think this goes to streaming. I don't think.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, Fox, both he and I got kind of screwed when the phenomenon was coming out. He had a 1,400 seat theatrical release that was going to be happening. And I think it was Regal or something that was going to be doing it. And then COVID happened, and I was going to have my film, The McPherson Tape, was going to get a theatrical release through Alamo Drafthouse, which it still may do this year. But that was the closest. I mean, certainly you've got Chariots of the Gods, which was UFO related greatly. That came out in the theaters in the 70s, but not a hardcore, you know. Yeah. I thought what Fox did with the program, that kind of covered the territory that Dan Farah's doing. So there's definitely going to have to be things that are going to be next level. And so I'm assuming that he's got those in there. But I think that Fox's the program kind of organized everything with the hearings and all those players. So, yeah, so I'm kind of like you. I'm waiting and seeing.
Yeah, time will tell sooner than later. What we'll do is we're going to end it there, but I am going to ask Dean to hang on for just a couple of minutes for a little bit of bonus content, folks, because that McPherson tape you've mentioned a few times, some of you will know what that is, some of you may not, perhaps newer to the topic, but it's something that's got a place in my heart near and dear to me, which still terrifies me to this day. So for those of you on the free feeds, this will be the end of things. Dean, just remind folks how they can listen to, or sorry, watch The Alien Perspective Part 1.
Sure. You can either purchase it or rent it on Apple TV or Amazon right now.
And Part 2 comes out June 1st after a premiere at Contact in the Desert. Yeah.
Yes. And people can also follow me on Instagram at Dean Aliotto. And if they go to alienperspectivemovie.com, I update things as well and the trailers there. And you can also purchase the movie through a link on that as well. And there's some behind the scenes pictures and stuff as well on that.
Awesome. All of those links will, of course, as usual, folks, be in the description. So thank you very much. And if you're staying with us on any of the paid feeds, you'll hear a couple more minutes of myself and Dean. That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium, YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rain.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, like, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, like, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.